This is Mormon Stories. I'm John DeLynn. Today we have a special treat for you. I will be interviewing Bent Washburn, who is an LDS comedian who's very funny. But I have two disclaimers. One is that Bent uses sometimes profane language and sometimes semi-sexually explicit material. It's definitely not R-rated, in my opinion. It's nothing worse than a PG-13 movie. And everything that he does has an important point or some wisdom behind it. But I just wanted to give you all this disclaimer that you should know about. There is some sexually explicit discussion, and there is some profanity, although that's not the majority at all. The second thing I just wanted to tell you is that we did a full video of Bent Washburn, and you can find that up on YouTube or in this podcast feed. So if you want to actually see Bent perform his material or see this interview, you can check it out at youtube.com/MormonStories or go up to mormonstories.org. But for those of you who are interested, I think this is a hilarious and insightful performance by Bent. So I hope you enjoy it. Thanks a lot. Mormon Stories podcast takes a ton of work and depends solely upon listener support. To keep this program alive, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org. Did you tell us what the headliner makes at a regular comedy club?
I didn't. The one-nighters that feature's making about $75 a show. The headliner on those one-nighters will make anywhere from $150 to $250 a night, depending on the booker and how much they're paying in the room.
So over time, you go from being...
opener.
You know what? Yeah. Opener to headliner.
And doing one-nighters to clubs. And in the clubs, it's varying money. I mean, you might be getting anywhere from... to feature again at a club, you might get anywhere from $300 to $700 for the week. And you're working like Wednesday through Sunday. But you don't have to drive anywhere. And the crowds are always better. And to headline that club, you might be getting anywhere from $1,200 to $2,000 for those 4-5 nights.
And what is it, how long do you think it takes to go from the low end to the high end if you're really working hard and have talent?
I started headlining way too soon. I started headlining like 2 years in, but that's way too soon. And I was...
Why? Too soon why?
Well, because that had to be a horrible show. I feel bad in retrospect for everybody who saw it. Horrible. Those were one-nighters, the bad rooms. In a couple to 3 years, you really should be able to, about 3 years, you should be able to put together the kind of show that can pass in a bad room. You should be able to do an hour. You should be able to... I would say if you've been doing comedy for 5 years and you haven't written 45 good minutes, you're never going to, this is never going to be, no way. To be a full-on headline, I think, probably around 7 years to be a decent headliner, 7 years.
And what are you making when you reach that point?
Well, then you're still not working the good rooms. And it depends. I mean, I know guys that were $60,000, $70,000 a year by that point, but... I'm a horrible businessman, so not me.
What are the good rooms?
What are the good rooms?
Yeah.
You mean in the country?
Yeah.
My favorite room is Acme Comedy Company, and it's one of the best in the world. It's in Minneapolis. It's fantastic. It's my favorite room.
What are some of the other ones? Just name off the top of your
some
head.
Really good some ones. Comedy Works, Denver, Cap City Comedy Club in Austin. That's one of the top rooms. The improvs are considered the top rooms, but they aren't always I don't consider them the top, really. A few of them are fantastic. Fantastic. I guess there's one. I've never played them, but all I've done is audition in them, like in Melrose Improv, and it's not fun to play that club. But the Irvine Improv is amazing. I've just never gotten to play it. I'm not famous, and I'm not hooked into L.A., so...
And does Salt Lake have a good room?
Yeah. The Wise Guys is a good room. It's a good room.
Well, that's where you were this past weekend.
Yeah, it's fun. It works. I mean, the crowds are good, and it's a controlled environment. The sound's good. They take care of that. That's the main thing. And it's an actual comedy club.
And how do you go from that level to being on, like, one of the late-night shows? That's the Holy Grail, right, or not?
I think the new Holy Grail is the one-hour special. That's the thing.
Like on HBO or Showtime?
Yeah, Showtime. And even that's not going to make you rich or famous. It just isn't. We live in a different world now, and fame is so easily attainable for the dumbest shit. Sorry, stuff. It's just amazing. how worthless AIM is now. And, you know, we have a culture. Let's face it, we make stuff for teenagers. We really do. We have a bunch of teenagers with expendable income, you know, or as I say, discretionary income and no discretion. That's what we've got. And a lot of our pop culture, you know what I mean? So you could be, this is what I mean. You could be on Tonight's Show 20 times. Have you heard of Jake Johansson?
I'm a bad guy to ask.
Yeah.
No.
But you're a normal guy. You're just, right? I mean, I can go downtown any big city and say, do you know who Jake Johansson is? And 90% of the people won't. He's been on, I think it's Tonight Show, 20 plus times. And yet he can't fill a big club. He's not famous. Now, there was a time, 20 appearances on Carson, you would be famous. But we're so fractured. And so yeah. Now what it takes is some lot of FaceTime. We last comic standing, something like that.
How much do you make showing being on Letterman or Leno or whatever?
They give you this standard, like it's what is it? What is it? SAG AFTRA wage. Seems like after it was all done, I got like $1,300.
That's pretty good for 5 minutes, right?
No, that's not bad. In a hotel room, they put me up in the Beverly Wilshire. That was kind of cool. I kept the pen. I didn't get to sleep there. I literally had to go in. I took a nap for like 3 hours. But I had to end up after my set because I had a gig. I had to start driving to Colorado, to Denver.
You didn't say after your sex, did you?
What was that? No, not after, did you say, after my set.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, after my sex, I had to drive. No, my set. My wife was not there.
So it's not a okay. So you don't get rich on those shows either.
No,
that's kind of the same. You get paid at a really good room.
Yeah, it's a credit that can help you get hired. And help you get booked, and it lends credibility. It's definitely, you need to get some of that.
How'd you get on Ferguson or Comedy Central?
It's hard to get on those, especially when you don't live in L.A. or New York, and I don't. So the way I got it was there was a manager, I had a manager for a while, out of the Bay Area, and Ferguson wanted to get comics that weren't from L.A., and so they called him up. And he was no longer my manager, but he really liked what I did. And they said, we're looking for some comics to put on TV that aren't from L.A. Who do you have? And he gave him my name and one other name. And I sent him a tape. And they said, oh, this is great. Come down and do it. It's just like that. It was really weird.
Was it pretty cool?
Yeah, it was very cool. It's very nice. I hate to say it was kind of a relief because by that time I'd been doing comedy for 13 years and I hadn't been on TV. And I was starting to think. I've been doing it for 10 years for a living by that point and still no TV credits. And I'm starting to think, I know guys, really funny comics, really good comics, whole career, not one TV credit.
Wow.
Yeah. And they never can get that kind of money that can come with it. And it's horrible. You start thinking, oh no, am I that guy? You know, I don't want to be that guy. But, I was going to tell you, that's how it'd be interesting too, is that when I was living on the couch and in the tent, that's when I met my wife when I was in that state. Isn't that crazy?
Where was she?
She was in Ogden, Utah.
In the military.
Yeah. We met and I give her a hard time all the time about going out with me. I mean, technically she went out with a homeless man. That's pretty funny.
Now you joke. I saw a bit you did where you said she had an alcohol in one hand and a cigarette in the other. Is that a true story?
Not totally. When I first met her, let's see. Well, no, yeah, I guess, yeah, that was, yeah. I met her, but she didn't know I'd met her. I was being set up with her on a blind date. And so I knew who she was, and she came to a club, and I saw her. And, yeah. But, no, the first date, I guess, yeah, she did have a beer. So, yeah. And, she had a cigarette outside. Yeah, okay. Yeah, but it wasn't at the party. She wasn't in front of me. Now I just ruined the bit. Thanks. Now everybody's going to know. My wife's not Mormon. My wife's Irish Catholic. She's practicing Irish Catholic, too. I mean, every weekend, like drunk. In fact, when I met her, she had a beer in one hand, cigarette in the other. Two Mormon rules at the same time. Just ambidextrous sinner, just... And of course, the Mormon in my head was looking at that, just thinking, this is hot. So we hit it off. We hit it off so well, my wife quit smoking for me. She did. Second date, looked into my eyes. I was just looking for a good reason to quit. Isn't that nice? So then we got married, which was apparently a good reason to start back up again. And then, but then she quit again. And to her credit, she has been quitting ever since. It's about 10 years quitting. Kind of awkward. We both do our part to make it work. You know how you do if you're in this situation. Like, her job is sneak around, right? Smoke in secret, don't get caught. My job, act like I can't smell. And so does my whole Mormon family. They just pretend. Except Mom, she's too old. She won't play along every time. Well, that's an interesting scent, Kelly, that you dabbed on during your walk. What is that scent? Yeah, Mom, that's Obsession by Philip Morris. The rest of the family pretend. Like my wife pretends. That's what amazes me. Our capacity to bullshit ourselves. Yeah, how long can you say you're quitting? You know? 10, 20 years? You're quitting. You're showing up for Thanksgiving with an oxygen cart. Yellow teeth and nails. Hi, Aunt Kelly.
Hi, kids. How are you doing? What's up?
Maybe a hole in her neck, even. How are we going to explain the gaping hole in the non-smoker's neck? What kind of story? I stumbled down the stairs and fell on a pencil. Wow. Well, let that be a lesson to you, kids. Don't leave your pencil at the bottom of the stairs. Big old Disneyland pencil did that, as you can see by the circumference, the souvenir pencil. Went up to Tinkerbell's waist and took out her tar-covered trachea. We're not sure why it was covered with tar. She's not a smoker, we know that.
How do you prepare a routine to be able to go on for 45 minutes or an hour? How much of that is spontaneous versus totally prepared? Do you have like a teleprompter? Like on your Wise Guys skit, did you have a teleprompter? Oh. Talk a little bit about the preparation and the delivery and the refinement of a bit.
Sure. How do you prepare? Well, I'm always thinking of these ideas that I think anything. I'll see something and I'll say, oh, that's funny. And I'll start writing it. And I'll probably do it on the computer a little in notebooks. And then I'll end up with what I call a wish list of things I want to talk about on stage because I want to explore this idea live. I do most of my writing, my finalizing on stage live. I start out with some basic ideas and what I think the main core of the joke is. I do have that, but I'll just have this wish list of jokes. Then over here I'll have the material that I've gone through this process, this writing process, that I know works. You know, that I know this material will introduce the audience to me. It'll let them kind of know where I'm coming from so I can have a character or point of view that's presenting the material, you know, that's talking. And so I'll have that set material. And then what I'll usually do is I don't even know where I'm going to start the moment I hit the stage. But usually I'll kind of, I'll decide about 2 or 3 minutes before I go up after I've had some time to watch the crowd and see what they're like and think about what I really want to do. I'll dive in and I'll start usually with something I know, you know, will work. Unless I'm really comfortable. In Utah, often I will start right off from my wish list. New ideas, thoughts, material that I've just wanted to work on. And then I will let, as those ideas grow, I will let them suggest to me the next topic that I will go to. And it'll either be a topic on my wish list or something I've already prepared that I know works. And so I just try to do that. I try to let the show tumble out organically. But it still is. It's been very often. If you see a bit, there's a good chance, if it's one of these older bits, which about, I would say every time I do a show, well, lately I've been doing a lot of new, but usually when I do a show, a 45-minute show, about a half hour will be tried and true material. It'll be written over and over and over. I mean, moving tiny little words and just pauses and really, really rehearsed. And This is when I really knew it was different. The first time we went married canoeing, that's when I found out it was a different animal. We went married canoeing with my sister-in-law and her fiancé. Do you see the problem? They're in an engaged canoe. There's oxytocin in her head, and they're dumb, and the love boat. That's what they're in, the love boat. We're in the Titanic. They're in the love boat. He's in the back steering like you do, right? She's up in front spotting for rocks, right? Just, left, honey, little left. All right, my little navigator bunny. And they hit a rock. My fault. No, that was my fault. You're so awesome. You're more awesome. It's gross. It was sick. It's gross. Every time they hit a rock, they made out. Just fish were puking. That's how gross it was. Meanwhile, in the married canoe, like, left, 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 left. My God, you're retarded. You get it. Moron. Well, try your other left, you damn mouth clown with your... Then we get the canoe in the water. Mary canoeing was just 2 hours of staring at the back of her nagging skull. Just... And down at my paddle, and then back at her skull. Just... You should have worn your helmet. When the Mary canoe hits a rock, you're going to kill us both. Well, you got it half right. It was an accident, officer. The canoe flipped over. She hit her head on a rock 17 times. Yeah. So you're married, you understand, don't you? Don't you? You understand the impulse to kill. Because you both feel it several times a day if it's a good marriage. But you don't kill. You do not kill your spouse. And this is love. This is married love, that you don't kill your spouse. It means you love him. That's all the proof you need. You still love me, baby. You woke up, didn't you? You just took a half-hour nap face up next to a pillow.
How do you have a prompter, a teleprompter, or a little list at the bottom of your feet? Like, how do you remember to go from joke to joke to joke to joke to joke?
I don't know. No teleprompter, no list. Some comics do kind of joke, you know. But if you watch the way I do things, it's more ideas, you know. So if I just follow the idea through, it kind of pulls me through. It reminds me. It's, you know, what I said just then is the perfect reminder for what I'm going to say next. And the bit pulls me through. And then at the end of that bit, it'll usually pull me into another idea. And then every once in a while, I'll hit a dead end. Like, what was I talking about? And I just...
Yeah, what do you do then? What do you do when you either blank...
I just say, okay, I'm not sure where I was going to go now. I mean, I'll just be.
But then how do you come up with something?
Sometimes there's just some tried or true, or I've written, I would say I've probably written and performed 6 or 7 hours of stand-up comedy material, I would say. And so there is something in the room or something I said. If I just relax and give my mind, I will grab onto something. Really soon.
So do you have most of those 7 hours right now on command?
Oh, no. Mm-mm. I would say I probably only have about two and a half hours. And even then I would start to... Now, did I already say that? You know, the longest show I've done is an hour and a half, maybe hour 40. I did an hour 45 once. That's horrible. I would never...
That's really long.
Horrible.
So if I threw out a bit, you could do it. If it's something you did over the weekend, you could do it.
Yeah, if it's one of those, it's kind of, I could do it. Now, this weekend, I did lots of new material. So no, a lot of that stuff this weekend, luckily it's taped, so I can go over it and tell myself what I want to keep and what I don't want to keep. And this weekend, some of that will never happen again. It's just stuff that kind of happened in the moment, and we went off on a tangent, and there it was, and it'll never happen again.
So you write sometimes spontaneously.
Oh yeah, a lot. And a lot of comics don't work that way. That's just the way I work. Some comics, it's word for word, set up, punch. You go see their show once. You'll go back to see it a year later, even. And you're like, well, this is exactly the same. And that's not the way I am at all.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So talk about, I guess there are a couple things we could talk about. We could dig more into your feelings and thoughts about the church, your loss of faith, how your faith and spirituality have progressed over the years. We could talk about your marriage and what that's been like being married to a non-member and a non-Utah.
I would say, as far as the loss of faith, it's been... I would say it's just reduction of faith. You know what I mean? I still have faith, but it's just... it's not as detailed, you know what I mean, or big. And it's faith now. What I do have is just, maybe it's just belief. One thing I do know is I don't have knowledge. You know, I remember when I was young and in Mormonism, that fight to know, you know, I know this is true. I know this. It was like you were trying to deny doubt. And I've since decided that that's not healthy. I think faith starts when you embrace doubt. The very first thing you have to do is be fearless and honest for true faith to happen. And you have to embrace your doubt and say, okay, I don't know. That's the truth of it. And then you build from there. You say, but I want to believe. It's just like in Alma. I think that's a beautiful description of how to have healthy faith. And the first, you must be honest about your doubt. And I spent so many years just pushing that doubt down. Having doubt was a sign of weakness, and you're something wrong. You didn't do that. You didn't say doubt. You didn't stand up a testimony to me and saying, I think this is true, but I'm not sure. No one would ever say that. I think more people should. When you don't do that, I think you end up with this guy. What was that guy? Haggerty? Ted Haggerty? That's a guy who can compartmentalize, because from the beginning, he's lied to himself. He took the doubt and went, I don't doubt. No, I know this is true. Well, that's a lie. And that's when you can compartmentalize that. I think that's how you say homosexuals are evil and then drive to Denver that weekend and have a tryst with your gay prostitute, you know? Because you can it's all a lie. So I think it's healthy to embrace your doubt, take the belief, live on your belief until it grows into faith. And I wish people would never say, I know, because that confuses things. You don't really know. It's not knowledge, it's faith. It's faith.
So are there Mormon-y things you have faith in?
Yeah. I guess there are some Mormon-ish, Mormon-y things.
Like what?
I kind of think some of the ideas, like Adam fell that men might be, men are that they might have joy. That's beautiful. I think that's true. I think that is why God created us, is to have joy. I think God created us. I have no idea how. I don't know how. I don't know. I also believe in evolution completely. So I don't know how.
But you do believe in a God.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know why. And I don't know. I really don't know why. The only thing I know is that I believe in a God. That's the only thing I know, is that I believe in God.
And what about Jesus?
That's a different thing. I mean, when you look at what he said and wrote, I believe in that. I see the, you know, in a very general way. But as far as the atonement, you know, I'm not sure anymore. Is this just a really powerful myth that helps us, that buoys us up and gets us through life? To me, it's not important to know if these stories are literally true. It's not. I have this belief that religion is God's attempt to communicate with the profoundly retarded. I really think that's what God's just... we're really dumb, and he's trying to talk to us. And I think too many people take the religion and they start getting very literal with all those things in there, when that's really not what they're about. I'm kind of a fan of Joseph Campbell and his take on religion. Big
myths.
Big fan. And I still believe in a God. I was reading this book, like How We Believe, by Michael Shearer, the skeptic guy. And I liked a lot of the information in there, and I guess I came to this belief that people would tell me, well, Ben, if you believe that religion is just this kind of biological thing that pumps up with people, you know, flows up out of the subconscious. Well, then God didn't create it, and how could there be a God? And I guess I would say I don't think God created religion. I think God definitely made man to create religion. We're supposed to create religions. God meant that. He wants us to do that. That's part of who we are and what we do. So God created us to make religion. But do I think God made the religion? No. No, I think that. And I don't think it's necessarily a social construct either. I don't think men sit down, I'm going to jerk people around with this one. I think it's much more organic than that and much bigger than that. We're born into these myths. They're here before we get here.
Speaking of that, what are your thoughts on Joseph Smith?
I think he's probably crazy, you know? I mean, I've read what he said. It's insane. But I've also read the Book of Mormon. It's beautiful, man. These myths, these are fantastic. These are great. It's this crazy mixture of the Eastern and Christianity. It's just great. Second Nephi, that stuff is beautiful to me. Still, to this day, I love that. I love it. And that he came up with this. And was that inspired of God? Yeah, I think it was. Absolutely. In spite of all the weird, crazy stuff. And then more importantly than that, I have so many family members for whom this is, and friends, for whom Mormonism is such a powerful, good thing for them. I mean, they build their life and their family on it. Now, for me, it was isolating. I felt so different and weird, and you know what I mean, when I go to church. But for them, it's this beautiful, wonderful, it's faith, too. It's healthy, it's faith for them. And I would never ask them to dump that because Joseph Smith was a freak. Why would you do that? I've told people many times, let's say you found out the inventor of the wheel was just a total creep. Would you stop driving cars? No, you wouldn't. It works for you. Your whole life is built on that. So I don't understand that, especially coming from Christians where I'm like, would you know what Constantine did? He formed your faith. What did he do? If I'm not mistaken, he boiled his mother-in-law in oil. Is that wrong? Am I wrong about that one? So it's like, okay, let me see. Like, we've got to pare down the Bible, and then I got to boil mom. You know? Come on. I don't know if that's true, though. That might be a, you know, urban legend I've heard.
So you're definitely not anti-church.
No, I am not. And I'm tired of that. It's tough because I believe Mormonism needs a place like a comedy club. Mormonism desperately needs a place where people can go in and be honest and embrace their doubt and tell the truth. Because right now people lie to themselves way too much. And it's not healthy. It's a very unhealthy thing. But it needs a comedy club. But when I go into the comedy club and talk like I do, and I know sometimes it's gratuitous and I may be dirty just to get a laugh. I get that. But I'll have Mormons start thinking, well, you're a bad example and you're evil and you're wrong and you hate Mormons, you're anti-Mormon. And I'm really not. I'm not. And then, on the other hand, anti-Mormons will hear me and they'll say, oh, you're one of us. Joseph Smith. No, I'm not one of you. I'm really not. I'm not. I don't want to change it, you know? Mormon doesn't fit me, Mormonism doesn't fit me, I know that, but I'm kind of a freak. Literally, I mean, there's that personality test thing. What is that?
Myers-Briggs?
Yeah, and it was developed by a guy who wrote a book called Please Understand Me or something. What was that guy's name? I had a friend, one of my best friends from college, took me through that book and we did my test. I'm like a 1% of the population. I'm a weird guy. I know that. Why would I want Mormonism changed to fit me? I'm a freak. They would screw it up. It needs to be what it is, you know? Well, we were doing it that way, but we found we were losing the comics. You can lose the comics anyway.
So do you still go to church?
No. I haven't been to church for about, how old am I? 45, so about 18 years. I went.
Do you miss it? Do you miss it?
Oh, yeah. But it can't. I don't know if I miss it. I miss where I was when I used to go to church, you know.
Do you wish you could go back to the true believing state?
It depends on what I would have to sacrifice. Can I not get up and speak my mind? Because if I can't, I can't do that. I cannot. And as it is now, I certainly know I couldn't, you know, do that. And more importantly, if you're not in that state and you go to church, I don't think you can do that for long. You know what I mean? Something has to. Maybe you can. I worry about it. I've got a son now, so I worry about that. Like, oh, I had this wonderful culture and religion. I did, and now I'm not giving this to him, and I worry very much about that. Because, yeah.
What are you going to do? Raise him as a heathen.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know if I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know.
How old is he?
He's 4 and a half. It's got to get done fast. I don't have much time to program him. I got to get this done.
Does your wife have a religious tradition?
She grew up Catholic, kind of, but she's not a devout Catholic, you know? So, we've talked about it, you know? And then we don't know how to handle that. Like, if I go to church and she doesn't want to go to the Mormon church, she doesn't believe these things, and how will she feel? And she doesn't necessarily believe the Catholic Church either, so she just want to go there because she feels like a poser and a, you know, fake. So,
sounds like Unitarian for you guys.
Sounds like what? Unitarian. Oh, no. I used to have a joke about Unitarians. It was, I talk about the streets. Every time I do shows in Minneapolis for about, well, not every time, but the first couple times, they have horrible streets. I don't know if you've been there. They're mixed up. Minneapolis, they're all over. And I say, I'm from Utah, where the streets are Mormon, very north, south, east, west. There's a grid, it's numbered. It says, your streets are all loosey-goosey, saved by grace Lutheran crap all over the place, in one way this and that way. And I say, St. Paul, that's downright Unitarian, that crap. Anything goes. I don't know, Unitarian? I don't know.
So are you... what do you miss, or do you miss anything about being a believer? And is it sad? Like, is it truly sad to consider raising a son without a faith tradition?
I think it is sad. I miss the connection, but I guess I always associated it, you know, with other people. But then when that connection proved to be, I felt false, you know what I mean? It wasn't a true connection I have with these people. I mean, it really got down to it. They're still just people, you know. So some of that felt like lip service to me anyway. But I still do miss the connections that you had with people, the sense of family.
Do true connections exist? Do true connections exist?
With people?
Yeah. Do you feel like you've been able to achieve authentic connections, unlike maybe some of the more superficial ones that you've had with church?
Good point. Yes. But I also had some very good connections in church, you know, some that were not superficial. There were those real connections, and those are what I miss. But not there weren't as many of them, frankly, as there are. Do you see what I'm saying? They were rare. They didn't happen for me a lot in the Mormon culture and community.
It's more common now.
It's more common for the connections to be there? Or?
Yeah.
So I could go to church and there might be more freaks like me, like artists, and that might be true because that's been a long time since I was there. I do think it's sad to raise a son without it. I think we're meant to have it. It's not natural to walk without that. It is natural to have it. Those things in place. Why would they occur all over the globe consistently if they weren't naturally occurring? So.
Yeah, for the history of mankind.
Yeah. Yeah. Nick, get a bad rap.
So you talked a bit about swearing. Like, what goes into that? Is it a decision? Is it just you're around people who swear, so you end up swearing in your bits? Or do you sort of say, this is what you have to do to be funny? Is it just a cheap way to get laughs? Is it, no, I want to be real, or I want to make a point? What goes into that decision to To swear, to the extent that you do.
I think a lot of it was I started swearing, and I wanted to be authentic. I swear a lot now. It's horrible. It's a bad habit, but I swear a lot. And so then it starts leaking into the show. It really does. Sometimes I want to swear because I want to be very clear about who I am and honest with them. When I do comedy, it's a vulnerable show that I do. I'm vulnerable. I open up and I am who I am, and it would almost feel like I was holding back somewhat there. Also, they're just words, and for comedy to happen, there are times when you need to go from point A to point Z, and the only word that can take you there, that can take that trip, is that swear word. There's no other word that can do that, do it for you. And then on top of that, there's the emotion that goes into place. I mean, oftentimes that you need to communicate, that needs to go into place, that can only be put there with the swear word, especially if I'm going to be true to a specific character I'm talking about. So I go into a specific character and I'm talking about this redneck. It makes no sense for that redneck character to say darn. That's not how he gets angry. That's not what comes out of his mouth. And also, I think a lot of the emotions in the bit, when the emotion starts to boil, it's, for me, that's the word that expresses it. And I think for most of the audience, that's the right word to say. And so it almost feels wrong for me to like, well, I'm not going to say this word because there's four people over here who don't want to hear that word. Now, I know 96 of you think that's the right word. And I do too, but I would hate for them to hear that slang word for sex. That would just be awful.
Do you think there's something healthy about people getting over offense at dirty words?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because I also think there's a point, I've been to comedy shows where I'm like, my word, this is constant. You know, it's just a barrage. But, yeah, I don't think it should shock people the way it does sometimes. I don't know. We're in the real world. We're not a church. This is a room. This is a comedy club. This is especially not. This is a place where the religion is say what you're really thinking and feeling, honestly.
If you heard your son swearing, would that disappoint you?
I already have.
At four?
At four.
At age four?
At four. I blame his mom. She's in the Air Force. So
So your wife might let one out occasionally, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I already have heard him. He hasn't done some of the... Well, yeah, he's done a couple of big ones. But you know what? He shows a lot of restraint with swear words. He doesn't really use them. For to express his anger, he, like, gets really red in the face and screams and that kind of stuff.
So does your, you know, extended family, your parents, your siblings, aunts, uncles, cousins come to see your show and when they hear you swear, yeah, you know, or your bits about Mormonism, is that an issue?
They're really nice about it. Normally when they see me, they've seen me in Utah. And in Utah, the club has rules about language. They cater to the local culture and say, that word, specifically the F word, well, and the C word, those two words can't be said. You can say any other word at the club in Salt Lake quite a bit, and they probably aren't. Me, they're not going to say anything. I'm headlining those shows, and they're fine with it. So usually my family doesn't see me. They have seen me out of state, and so they've heard me drop the occasional F-bomb where I thought it worked with a joke. And I have a couple jokes where it absolutely has to be there. And they haven't said anything. They've been very nice about it. My family, they understand.
Overall, have you felt well supported by family?
Totally, completely. Yep. They really support me. And they're really nice. And I'm not saying they're like, yeah, we agree with everything Ben says and does. It's just that they certainly don't hate me for being who I am. And we I see them all the time. Every time I come home, I spend my time with my family visiting and seeing the nest. They let me play with the nephews and nieces unaccompanied. We'll sit in the room together and they'll let me talk with them. And yeah.
So what's it? Do you have a day job?
Oh, are you day job?
Or are you? How do you be a comic and a dad and a husband in Germany?
Now since we went to Germany,
I live in Germany now. I do live in Germany, and man, there are things I miss about our country when I'm over there. You know what I miss, and I really enjoy when I'm here. I miss when I'm in Germany. I miss this about America: not having to pay attention when you drive. I love that about our country. You can just, your mind can wander and shit. Because we have really wide streets with shoulders. They don't have shoulders a lot over there. We have like, it's weird. We like ended the road and then people crash. We're like, shit, what happened? They went off the road. Well, let's give them some extra road. And then people crashed again. Shit, he went off the road after we gave him the edge. Well, make it wider. Give him an emergency lane. And then make a shoulder, you know, and we kept going till pretty soon we just got these, our roads are ridiculous. It's crazy. We even have the rumble strips. They don't have this in Europe. You have these rumble strips, you know, where the asphalt is grooved so it wakes you up. In case you take a nap, because you might, because it's really relaxing. Isn't that crazy? That our road, excuse me, you're driving, and then we have another whole lane to get our shit together. That's crazy. Just, oh, shit, I'm driving. Oh, that's right. And Germany's not like that. When you go to Germany, the road ends where the road ends. It'll be asphalt. The Autobahn has a little shoulder emergency area. But most highways, it's like two lanes. You go like 80 miles an hour, like with just like a, it's, and it's just the road in. It'll be asphalt, then they'll have a white line, and then they'll have like 2 or 3 inches of shoulder, just in case. And then death. And Germans are okay with that. They don't mind that people are dying. They're cool. I mean, they're not killing people intentionally now. They quit doing that. They used to. My German neighbors cannot even understand the concept of an emergency lane. They couldn't understand. I told them, I said, no, it's an extra lane for emergencies. I said, but this is just, it's road? It's an emergency lane, but there is no emergency till you go off the road. Then you have this emergency. And the rumble strip, they were like totally... I said, yeah, it's notched asphalt. It'll wake you up when you drive. You sleep while you're driving. This is not a good idea. This is not efficient. I told him, yours are dangerous. People could die. And they just, well, perhaps it is better for you to pay attention while you're driving. But us, we should worry about it. No, make the road wider. We don't want to lose the dipshits. That'd be horrible. The dipshits died, that'd be horrible. What would we do without dipshits? It's a different country. It's been German. Have you tried speaking German? Difficult. I thought I would learn German. I thought I could. I thought, I will be immersed in people speaking German. But I have not. Since going to Germany, I have not been immersed in people speaking German. I've been immersed in people speaking English with a German accent. As a result, I've made no progress at speaking German, but I've made great progress at speaking English with a German accent. It's great. A few more months, I will be fluent with my accent. And I come home to America and I'll use my accent. How are you doing today? And people will say, wow, your English is excellent. And I'll say, this is the first time I'm hearing this. Thank you. I never hear this before. And they will say, well, that's because English isn't your native language. And I'll say, no, this is because I am from Utah.
How do you be a comic and a dad and a husband in Germany?
Well, now, since we went to Germany, I'm not. I mean, I'm still doing comedy, but, you know, and that was something when my wife and I decided to have my son. She's like, well, you're going to have to cut back. Because I was going on the road 40 weeks a year, 45 weeks a year.
Married?
Well, yeah, that's the problem. Yeah, you can't be married for long doing that. And but our first year of marriage, she was in Korea. She was Air Force. She went to Korea. And so I would go over, be with her in Korea for about 3 weeks. Then I'd come home and live on the road. And then go to Korea and then come home and live on the road. Did that for a year. And then we came home. And for about 2 years, I cut the work back to about 30 weeks a year. And then the rest of the time I was home. And when you're gone for that, sometimes you're not gone the whole week either. You know what I mean? I'm gone Wednesday through Saturday, but I'm home on Sunday night and Monday and Tuesday, and then I leave again. Lots of people do that. But it just started to get to be too much. And so after the son was born, then I cut it way back for about 9 months. I didn't go anywhere. And then I built it back up, and then we moved to Germany. And 10 weeks a year, that's all the club appearances I do now.
Is that hard to cut it back? Me. Do you feel like cool. you're... It does?
Yeah, it drives me nuts. I'm writing now.
What are you
I'm
doing?
Writing lots of blog essay things. Essays, more than blogs. And
so what do you do in Germany when when you can't be a comic?
I watch my son. I take intensive German courses. And I write. I write down all the funny things I'm thinking about. In fact, since I've been there, even though I only had 10 weeks last year, I've got another whole new CD, another 45 minutes of material about what it's like to be an American moving to Germany and what this experience has revealed to me about American culture.
Bent, I have one word for
what?
You.
What is it?
Podcast.
Oh, that's what I should do.
Start a podcast.
I don't know how to do this. It's computers, it's cameras.
I'll teach you, brother. I'll teach you. Okay, we'll talk about that later.
I should. Yeah. Something to do.
Have you ever met any famous comedians?
Yeah, Robin Williams. I met him last year. I was headlining a show in Mill Valley. It's a theater just north of San Francisco. And he happens to live right nearby, and he drops into this Throckmorton Theater every once in a while and go to the green room. There he is. It was really cool. I was with my daughter. She got to meet him, and he joked around with my daughter, and then we hung out. Him and I and all the other comics, and just there was that camaraderie that you have with comics. And he headlined the show instead of me.
Yeah,
we decided he would headline. He was very funny and very nice guy. Really sweet guy.
Is he a little crazy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's
a little unstable?
Yeah, he snaps in and out of these characters while he's playing. And even when he's talking to you, he'll do the character and back. And it's kind of like...
You think he might be a little bit mentally ill, maybe?
Yeah. Or broken in a great way. Yeah.
Are like you, maybe?
Yeah. Except I'm not that. I'm more normal. I'm a little broken, but not. As long as I don't... things work good until I start getting nervous, and then I turn into like a really strange.
Talk a bit about the word of wisdom and your observance or non-observance.
Oh, boy. yeah, I drink lots of coffee. I love coffee.
There's just a lot of rules when you grow up Mormon, you know. There's no drinking. There's no smoking. No premarital sex. No coffee, which seems like a weird rule. No coffee, logical. You can't drink. You can't smoke. You can't have sex. Why stay awake? No coffee does strike me as a weird rule now. When I was little, it didn't seem weird. Because everybody thought coffee was evil. You know what I mean? Everybody in Mapleton, Utah thought. So it wasn't weird. Right? That's the way it is. When the whole town's doing something weird, it's not weird. It's normal. One person doing something weird, yeah, that's a nut. But a group of people doing something weird, that's a church. It is. Not in a bad way. It's just true. You just don't know it's weird because it's your weird shit. Like, the Pope's hat is really weird. It's a weird hat. It looks... cool in the Vatican, wear it on the subway. Go to a Grizzly game with the Pope hat on. See what happens. It's weird.
The first time I really tried coffee, I was with my friend from college. And he was my best friend. He's a wonderful guy. And he was drinking some coffee and he was trying to get me to drink it. He was like, come on, have some coffee, drink it. And he grew up Mormon. He's gay. So that was, talk about a tough road. But so he, can you drink it. And then I tasted it. Just, I don't care. I don't. And it was good. And then I started drinking more and more of it. I don't know when that was. What year was that? That was a long time ago. I haven't stopped since. I loved it right from the get-go. It was really good. But I dumped lots of cream and sugar in it, so that probably had something to do with it. And I used it to stay awake on my long drives, coffee. But yeah, I was talking.
You're giving us another reason to hate the gays. They're going to make us drink coffee.
Talked me into gay coffee. I'm into coffee, not gay coffee. I don't know what gay coffee is. Gay coffee would be all that vanilla flavored crap. That's gay coffee, I guess. He taught me into coffee, I guess. So,
still a Mormon. This one I learned is kind of Mormonish still. Near death experience, almost died. Earthquake. Now I've survived many earthquakes in my world travels. A big one in India. 20,000 people died. I survived because I was standing in a doorway in Seattle. And that's the key to survival, is distance from the epicenter or disaster. But this earthquake, I was at the epicenter, Olympia, Washington, in a coffee shop. Not making it up. Having my coffee, all of a sudden everything's shaking, bouncing off the shelves. I'm thinking, wow, this coffee works. I need to cut back on this. Now, the rule of the earthquake, stand in the doorway. Do I do that? No, I run through the door, out into the street, so I can take a brick in the head. Why? Because I grew up Mormon, right? I cannot die in a coffee shop.
Other things, yeah, I might have a drink now and again, but I think there's a good reason alcohol is against rules. I don't know how you can not think it's a bad idea when you're a comic. I mean, rooms full of these people. Just.
It ruins people?
Yeah. I'm saying rooms. I'm dealing with rooms full of drunk people the time.
Right.
I see it. But that nothing makes you want to have drink more than hanging out with drunk people. It's just, anything. This is horrible when you're sober and everybody else is drunk. It's horrible. But
makes you want to drink less or more?
More. Because you just don't. You're like, I either have to leave or I have to be very mentally out of it. Because this is horrible. Drunk people. Drunk people are horrible.
Right.
But because my wife's Irish Catholic, so she definitely, she drank from, a kid. She got caught in, I think it was a sophomore in high school, with a rum and coke in her high school English class. In class.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
And then she lied and told her mom, well, I found it outside. And her mom believed it. It's unbelievable. It's so funny.
Does she like your comedy?
Yeah. Yeah. She's sick of it sometimes. She saw it again for the first time in Germany. I did a show recently. And she likes it. Yeah. She'll laugh. Even the stories about her, she'll laugh. And I got tons of them. But
are you always on, like when you're home? Are you always being funny? Or do you try and turn that off? Or are you really serious and brooding when you're not?
I get really performing. I just close down and get all quiet and that kind of stuff. Most comics aren't like extroverts. Like Robin Williams is most comics I know aren't like that. They're more introverted, but I am always writing jokes and thinking of funny things, and it bugs her. It's like, quit it. So I try to turn it off. I can't help it.
Do you think God has a sense of humor?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. It's got to. I mean, yeah. I mean, this thing's hilarious. I think God has an incredibly dark sense of humor. That's what I think. Yeah.
What are your views on homosexuality, on gay marriage and the church?
I don't care if they get married. I just don't get that. What I don't understand is, I mean, I understand a lot of people's concerns, and there's some valid ones about it occurring and, you know, adoption laws and what about this, and I get all that. What I don't understand is the connection between gays get married and world goes to hell in a handbasket. That's why I don't, you know.
I got on the plane once. This is right after Katrina. Sit by the woman and I say, boy, this is some weather we're having. Well, it's because of this goddamn administration and they have all these SUVs and they won't clean up the air. And I'm like, holy shit. I just stepped in the political turd. I was trying to weather talk. And an idiot here blamed a hurricane on an SUV, which is asinine. You know, I just want to hit her. I think, you're a moron. But then the far right comes in and tells me, why Katrina? Well, it's because of the homosexuals. Holy shit! That's even dumber. Isn't that amazing? Really, the homosexual. Yeah, the butt sex reap the whirlwind. Are you an idiot? It's amazing. So God hated gay people, so he sent a hurricane right into the Bible Belt. Some shitty aim. You see, it's insane. And sad, too, because Hurricane Alley overlaps the Bible Belt. That means where they say that, every time there's a hurricane, there's an angry redneck, you know. Look what the goddamn faggots did to my trailer. That recliner is ruined. Can't fix that with duct tape. Insane. I don't care. I don't care if gays get married. I know I'm in Utah. This could be a problem, but I just don't give a shit. I think we have bigger problems. You know what I mean? I don't get it. See, to me, it's all just about words anyway. Well, they can't get married. They live together. I know, but they can't get married. How about, what if we let them get married, spelled M-E-R-R? And then you could say, under your breath, they're married with an E. You could just do that. You could do your little shit. How much you want to bet everything doesn't go to hell in a handbasket? Because the gay people say they're married.
So we'll get you out of here on this. Talk a little bit about the importance of humor for life, like your philosophy on why we need humor, what humor can do, what motivates you, why you do what you do. If you even feel analogous spiritual things when you're really rolling in a comedy routine, and why you'd make the case for comedy within the church.
Yeah, what does it do? It deflates things. It makes us take things much less seriously. It certainly dissipates fear, I think. Comedy does. It's a comforter in a lot of ways. It dissipates and releases these fears and anxieties and tension. I think it brings people together. It sure can make you realize that you have this common ground that you didn't know you had. I think it can expose things too, you know. Comedy has done that for, like, satire, right? It's done that for, that's what satire has always been about. Like, there are those who want to keep it quiet and not talk about certain things or whatever, and those elephants, you know, that are in the living rooms. And comedy has traditionally pointed those out. And so satire, I think it does that. Boy, you got me on this one.
No, you're doing great. This is great.
Yeah, I think humor reveals those ridiculous truths and sometimes the painful truths and the threatening truths. That's what it does. And if it does it well, it almost becomes irrefutable. It's really powerful in that sense that, well, everybody's laughing and so he must have a point. Because when nobody laughs and you're doing these things, then probably there's a flaw there somewhere. I've usually found when something is really, really fair and true, it is often also funny, at least as a comedian, if it's fair and true. And I don't mean flippancy. That stuff's way overrated, where people just bark off the stuff that everybody agrees with anyway. You know what I mean? Like, boy, that Bush sure is stupid. Well, yeah, we already know that. And then they'll have a clever way of saying Bush is stupid or Clinton's horny or... And that kind of stuff always bored me. But when people really present an idea and or take an assumed truth and deconstruct it and expose the ridiculousness of this assumed truth, you know, that's kind of that amazing thing that was sitting under your nose and like, wow, I'd never saw that and looked at that. So I think humor can do that too. It can expose the elephant, but it can also expose a mystery in the mundane. It can make you walk through kind of the world with some fresh eyes. I hope it does. That's what I want my shows to do. I want them to. I don't want to be just an observational comic. I want to be make observations that kind of are expanding, like maybe change the way you. Because that's what it did for me. That's why I'm bringing it up. Is because I was looking at the world and suddenly I saw something. I'm like, wow, I had not thought of it that way. That's unusual. And I'm trying to share that experience, that discovery that made me laugh.
So you're driven, do you feel like you're driven by altruistic motives then, your comedy?
No, probably very selfish and look at me, I'm cool. That's how it started. It honestly started a need for attention. I was the fifth boy, you know what I mean? I needed attention desperately. And I mean, I was this fifth boy. My parents were really going for a girl. You know what I mean? They wanted a girl. Like so many parents do in Utah. You'll see them all those one gender. Oh, they're trying for the boy or the girl. And in fact, I know they did. And then I had a sister. And I really always felt kind of ignored. I don't know why. And probably not even true. Or what? Well, true. That's a lot of kids. Probably needed more attention. But it evolved into something else. It really did. I'm obsessed with the process of sharing what I've seen. And maybe I'm obsessed with that process because seeing it alone is lonely. But seeing it and then sharing it, okay, I'm not crazy. You see that, okay, we're together now. You know, and
That's good. Well, we got to get you out on something funny. Oh. So why don't you lay
pressure.
Down your favorite bit?
My favorite bit,
or the bit that you think is most appropriate?
The most appropriate bit for this for Mormon culture. This interview. I did one on that show. I think that's appropriate for this. But no, that's kind of that's not. This is going to get bad. Like, no, not that one. No, can you? No, it should be a religion bit, it seems like to me.
All right.
I should talk about religion, but I don't think I should talk about circumcision. This seems too specific. We should talk about, you know what I mean? We should talk about something in general, religion in general. I don't know if it should be really doubt. I don't know if it should go into doubt or belief. You know what I mean? Usually the doubts.
Let's end with belief.
Belief. Something uplifting in belief. Well, this happens to me. I'll have people come to me. Well, let's just end this way. Here we go. You asked me if there's something I miss about being a true believer. And this is what I really miss. I miss knowing everything. You know what I mean? I used to know everything. And when you're growing up Mormon, you know everything. You do. You know there's a pre-existence, so that would be everything before time. And you know that. And then you know why you're here. You know the here and now. You know. And then where you go after you die. You literally know everything. And now I know nothing. You know, literally. Nothing at all. I don't know the pre-existence. I don't know where I am. I really don't. That we're somewhere up in the foothills. I'm going to have to get directions home. I don't know where I am. I don't know where I'm going after I die. I don't know. I don't even know how this bit is going to end. I have no idea. So I don't know anymore. That's what I miss. And is there anything else funny there? But some people, this will happen too, that I did a bit on this, but I think it's, this will happen to me a lot, where I'll get people up to me, come up to, I think religion gets a bad rap, is what I'm saying. I think religion is a good thing, and it gets this bad rap, and I run into lots of comics. Have an atheist comic friend, even, who's, we've talked about it a lot, but I've heard this many times, well, religion's caused all the wars on the world, which is just hogwash. If you look, the last century, World War II, World War I, you know what I mean? Vietnam, Korea, I mean, communist Russia killed a ton of people. They're not, and they were atheists. You know, Stalin was an atheist. He did that with no religion. So I'll get people that'll blame their life on religion. I've had it many times, and Mormons will come up to me, well, ex-Mormons, Mormonism ruined my life. Many times I've had that happen.
I don't think religion's bad. I really don't. I'm often misunderstood on this. I myself am not a good Mormon, but it's good. It's a good thing. You know what I mean? I get tired of getting approached by people who are angry. Like, I used to be a Mormon. The Mormon church ruined my life. Don't do that. It's bullshit, okay? Especially if you're a white, straight male. I doubt Mormonism ruined your life. Have you ever had that? You know what I mean? It's not that tough when you're a white, straight male, jackass. You ever had one of those guys come? I've had a guy go, Mormonism ruined my life. And in my head, I'm thinking, really? I would have pegged that on the meth. I would blame methamphetamines for your bad life and your bad skin, too. I mean, seriously. Were you still in car stereo so you could afford to pay tithing? No, I think you used the money on drugs, jackass. You know what I mean? All right.
I guess that's something funny. I don't know. We need more belief.
That's good. Don't blame it on the religion.
Yeah. Don't blame it on religion. Religion doesn't make people crazy. People make religion crazy. You got to remember that. So.
Words of wisdom from Bent Washburn.
From an idiot.
All right. The website is
www.getbent.com. That's GETBENGT. And I have a CD called Hellbent that has a lot of this religious kind of comedy material on it about growing up Mormon.
How do you buy it?
You can get it on my website through PayPal. You can email me and I'll set something up. I have another CD with swearing on it called Bent on Destruction that you might like. And a DVD called Mormon Meets World.
That's a lot of Mormony material?
A lot of Mormony, but then also some other that's not Mormony. I did it back in 2002, so.
And you can buy all these on your website?
You can buy Hellbent and Mormon Meets World. Bent on Destruction I'm not yet offering, but I should. I'm just lazy.
And a soon-to-be-released podcast.
You're right, from Germany.
I have to ask you one last question. Oh, yeah. You hear about these missionaries who, go serve in Japan, and then they become, celebrities in Japan because they speak Japanese. And the Japanese people think it's so funny to have an American there speaking good Japanese. Why don't you go become this ultra-famous American comic in Germany making fun of America?
I am not smart enough to learn German. I don't know whether it's my mind's 45. It's 45 years old. And it doesn't remember stuff. Or my mind, I cannot convince my mind that it should learn things, I think is part of it. You know how when you get older, I think my mind just says, you're not kidding us anymore. We don't need this. You're 45. You're going to die soon. We don't need German. So I'm having a heck of a time learning German. It's killing me. Yeah.
Well, Bent Washburn, thank you so much for coming on Mormon Stories Podcast.
Oh, you are welcome, John. My pleasure.
Good luck in all you're doing.
Thank you. Good night.
Stay funny.
I'll try.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to provide feedback, please check us out at mormonstories.org. If you want to help keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider either making a financial contribution or spreading the word about this episode through your blog, Twitter account, Facebook page, family newsletter, or through your ward bulletin and ward newsletter. Just kidding about those last two. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. Check them out at claytonpixton.com or skypixton.com. That's Sky with an E, S-K-Y-E, pixton.com. Thank you.
Though like the wanderer, the sun gone.